This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, welcome back to the Holistic Women's Health Podcast. On today's episode, I have Emily Dawson. First question is, well, we're talking all about the gut, skin connection, and eczema. So I want to know, is eczema caused by just one thing, or is it caused by multiple things? Is it the gut? Is it the products we used? Is it triggered by something else? How do we know what the root cause is? Walk us through.
So I think with eczema, it is a vastly misunderstood condition, firstly. And I think, you know, in the Western world where we live, we are really focused on, you know, removing foods from the diet and changing the products that we're using and paying attention to the environment and things like that when we want to bring the eczema down or get rid of the eczema. And I do think those things can be very helpful. And we'll talk a little bit more, obviously, about some of the triggers. But at the end of the day, what I have seen time and time again is people who have recurring eczema, you need to look at what's going on with the gut. And I think as much as removing some of the common triggers can help to bring eczema down, at the end of the day, we want to get to the root of the eczema so that it goes away for good and it doesn't keep coming back. And in my opinion, that is looking at your gut health. We know the gut is obviously where you're absorbing nutrients. It's where your immune system resides. Like, there's so much going on in the gut that can impact the skin. And what I've seen with clients, the most successful clients are those that we look at what's going on in the gut and we address what's going on there.
So gut does have a lot to do with outside appearance conditions like eczema?
I think that the gut is 100% dictating what's going on in the skin. I personally view your skin as a window into your gut. And I honestly don't even think that we can have a conversation about what's going on with skin health without talking about what's going on with the gut. Like, the two are so interconnected. Don't get me wrong. Definitely things like stress, food choices, environmental toxins, products, those can definitely trigger eczema, right? And make it worse or bring it to the surface. But at the end of the day, the eczema is rooted definitely in what's going on with the gut. So I think when we talk about long-term relief, like, that is the answer, right? Is getting to the root cause, which is gut, time and time again.
So what exactly is it in our gut? Is it that we've got a parasite, or what is it that we have leaky gut? What in our gut is actually causing the eczema to show up?
So this is another one that I think is also vastly understood, right? Misunderstood, is we are always looking for the one thing. Like, what is that one thing that's driving my eczema that I can clear from the body? But what I've seen with eczema is every case is actually a little bit different. There are definitely some patterns that I'm seeing. You know, typically there is some level of imbalance, whether that is an overgrowth of pathogens like H. pylori, parasites, yeast, bacteria. Typically there is some type of leaky gut situation happening, which we know leaky gut is usually the result of pathogenic infections. So when we've got leaky gut, the intestinal lining is permeable. Toxins can leak through the gut lining. They inflame the body. That can cause skin issues. I'm also often seeing low levels of beneficial flora. So probiotics actually not being high enough or abundant enough, especially those probiotics that produce butyrate. Butyrate is an anti-inflammatory short-chain fatty acid. And when we don't have enough of these healthy bacteria, we're not getting enough butyrate production, and then anti-inflammatory activity is low. That also kind of opens the gate to more infections, right? So that's a big one. I think, you know, pathogens, leaky gut, poor digestive capacity, and we've got the low beneficial flora. Those are often patterns that I'm seeing with clients, and things that I'm seeing show up on stool tests. I also often see poor immune function. So we know like 80% of the immune system is in the gut. And so when I'm looking at stool tests and my eczema clients, oftentimes I'm seeing that their immune systems are just totally wiped out because they've been fighting off infections, fighting inflammation for so long that eventually the immune system becomes depleted. Or the opposite end of the spectrum, the immune system is just firing like crazy, where it's just in this acute response scenario because there's so much inflammation happening.
And in that case, you wouldn't want to stimulate the immune system because it could just keep activating the immune system, making everything worse. So do you start somewhere easier in the gut? Where exactly would you start?
So this is where I do think working on eczema needs to be bio-individual, right? Because we need to understand if someone's immune system is totally wiped out versus if their immune system is in overdrive, that's definitely going to help dictate kind of what I'm working on with them right away to just bring those symptoms down. But I think overall, when we think about eczema, to me, this is an inflammatory condition, right? So anything that we can do to lighten the load on the immune system, lighten the load on the gut, bring that inflammation down is going to be helpful. So I think in terms of a starting point, number one, we do want to look at triggers. Like what is actually driving up that inflammation? And we're always looking at dietary factors, right? I'm looking at the environment, topical products, stress, how those things kind of impact what's happening with the eczema. And what I notice is as soon as we start working on those areas, the eczema does start to lift a little bit, right? But then we take it one step further and we actually address the reason this is all happening. And usually that is more of like the gut stuff that I was talking about, where we're looking at the leaky gut, we're looking at the bacterial infections, the low flora, working on kind of rebalancing the gut after we've been able to lighten the load a little bit and just bring those symptoms down.
So I want to talk through some of the triggers. So we have some dietary, environment, topical, stress, other things like inflammation, sleep, mold. Are there any other triggers that you can think of that someone's like, ooh, okay, that sounds like me?
I think, you know, we touched on a lot of the most important ones. I think toxins are just huge in general. So whether those are coming from inside the body, outside the body, I find with a lot of clients who deal with ongoing eczema, detox pathways are a little bit sluggish. So things like the lymphatic system, the kidneys, the liver, the bowels, they're not working as optimally as we want them to be. And so what happens is if we've got infections in the gut, we know that those are all immediately going to be producing toxins, right? Then let's say we've got toxins coming in from our environment. We live in a big city with lots of pollution. Maybe we're drinking tap water. Our air is a little bit, you know, toxic in the home, things like that. Even using topical products that we know bring toxins into the system, like creams and perfumes and makeups and stuff like that, all of a sudden we've got this huge toxic burden on the body. And so I think that toxins are a huge driver of eczema. And the answer is definitely, you know, remove as many of the toxins as we can, but also to support those detox organs. And with every single one of my clients, I'm always starting with that. It's like lightening the load and then also supporting the liver, the lymphatic system, the kidneys, getting the bowels moving so that toxins are actually mobilized and moved out of the system.
With all of these things, do these things cause, can they cause, let's say, adult eczema just out of the blue, or are they more so worsening the eczema or both?
I think that at the end of the day, like I said before, I do think that the root of the eczema is typically some form of gut imbalance, which is kind of driving up an immune imbalance and causing us to be more reactive to these things, right? So I don't think that like using one topical product is all of a sudden going to give you eczema for the rest of your life. But if you're someone who's got an underlying infection, so we know there's kind of that susceptibility factor, then maybe we have a really high toxic load and we're super stressed. It might be that, oh yes, I use this product and that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. Do you know what I mean? So I think there's always going to be a deeper reason as to why the eczema is there or why it's triggered in the first place. But the other things are more of just kind of like triggers that light the fire, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like you're filling your bucket, and all of a sudden it's just overflowing, and now all of a sudden right. everything's going wrong.
No, so it's not like, oh, I started eating gluten and dairy, and then all of a sudden I developed eczema. Typically, it's not like that. The gluten and the dairy are kind of like the triggers, but they're really just lighting something else that's happening much deeper inside the body. And so removing the gluten and dairy, great, it's helpful. It's going to bring down that toxic load. It's going to help with the inflammation, calm things down, but that's not the answer over the long run, right? The answer is looking at why am I actually more susceptible to getting eczema in the first place?
Yes. And so you start with gut, and then would you do liver? And then would you work on eliminating some toxins, environment, and then topicals after that?
I think the first step, you know, obviously the way that I'm working with each client is different depending on their own personal scenario, what's going on in their lives, what's driving their eczema, things like that. But first step for me is always just lighten the load as much as possible. And so that usually looks like removing some of those trigger foods. And you don't have to be super restrictive. It's more just kind of emphasizing the anti-inflammatory nutrients, taking out the super inflammatory foods or the foods we know really trigger eczema, starting to support detox. So doing what we can to kind of gently improve liver function, make sure you're pooping every day, support your lymphatic system, just easy, simple things, reducing stress as much as possible. And, you know, when we think about these things as a nutritionist, these are very foundational, right? So oftentimes we're working with this with clients right off the bat, but doing that and then kind of pulling out some of those environmental toxins. So if someone says to me like, hey, I'm using this perfume every single day, and I know that that perfume has got a lot of chemicals in it that could be triggering eczema, I'm going to recommend that they pull that out, right? So kind of like swapping out those triggers is important so that we're reducing the overall detox. Then once we nail that down, then we're going more specifically into the gut where we can figure out, okay, do you have something like yeast overgrowth? Is there a parasite? Is there H. pylori? What's going on with the gut lining? How's your healthy flora looking? Then we're kind of taking it to that stage once we've nailed down those foundations of improving the detox, focusing on reducing elimination, getting those or inflammation, getting those environmental toxins under control, that sort of thing.
When you say supporting the lymphatic system, do you like, well, I imagine if you have full body eczema, you wouldn't be dry brushing, but do you like that? Do you like infrared sauna? Do you like the lymphatic drops or the lymphatic creams?
I love using homeopathic remedies for the lymphatic system. So, you know, detox kits, lymphatic drops like the Undas can be really helpful for that. Infrared saunas, I'm a huge fan of for eczema. I've seen clients see incredible progress with that. Also just movement. You know, I think with lymphatic drainage, we think so much about getting these lymphatic massages and dry brushing and cold plunging, and those things can be helpful. But at the end of the day, even if you're just moving your body, like gentle restorative yoga, extremely helpful. I'll often recommend just lying on the floor with your legs up against the wall to kind of drain some of that lymphatic fluid. That can be really helpful. So I think at the end of the day, don't get too caught up in it. Just focus on moving every day. And, you know, maybe if you're working with a practitioner, consider some of those lymphatic drops. Those can be helpful. But yeah, that's definitely my top. And then if you have access to an infrared sauna, 100%, I would recommend doing that for sure.
I do want to talk about foods a little bit also, because foods can, well, you tell us, can foods play a big role in eczema?
Definitely. So I think, like I was talking about before, foods can be triggering. If you've got underlying eczema, there's lots of inflammation, the gut is all over the place, peeling out the trigger foods can have an enormous impact on how you feel. And I've seen a lot of progress when even within just 30 days of removing certain trigger foods, people see a lot of progress. I don't think staying off those foods for the rest of your life is the answer. So I really want to clarify that. And I think with eczema, a lot of people just become like dairy-free, nightshade-free, sugar-free forever because they need that to manage the symptoms. But it's actually not the case, right? We peel those foods out short term while we work on the reason you have eczema, and then typically they can be tolerated again. But I do think there are a lot of foods that can make things worse if you're in kind of that acute scenario. Definitely gluten products, dairy products, eggs, soy, peanuts. Those are kind of the big five that I see with eczema. Certain people can be sensitive to nightshades as well if there's severe inflammation going on. But I think just those five alone, peeling them out typically makes a really big difference. And then kind of replacing them with more anti-inflammatory nutrients. So looking at maybe a modified Mediterranean diet where we peel the dairy out, but we're still emphasizing all of those omega-3 fats, whole grains, lots of whole foods, fruits, veggies, animal proteins, things like that.
What are your thoughts on the elimination diet? Temporarily.
In practice, I will be honest with you, I rarely use elimination diets. Never. Like probably 5% of my clients are doing an elimination diet because I do think that it's kind of a temporary fix. Do you know what I mean? If we are peeling out 30 different foods, people will feel better, right? But then it's very hard to get them off the elimination diet is what I find. And so I would prefer to do more of a gentle approach where we are almost focusing on what are the foods I actually should be bringing into my diet? How can I do this in a sustainable way? So I'm usually teaching people like, hey, let's look at the modified Mediterranean diet. That's not a bad diet to be following long-term, right? Even though it peels out some of the gluten and things like that, it's much more realistic. It's an easy diet to kind of sustain. Even if you're doing that 80% of the time, we know there's so many benefits for health. And I don't view it as like this extreme diet or elimination diet, if you know what I mean. I will say with eczema, in certain cases, obviously when it's more severe, I do recommend taking those big five out. And I actually do that with almost everyone with eczema right off the bat is let's just peel those out 80 to 90%. And we will see things going down, but I just make sure that we work on bringing those back in after the eczema is under control and we've healed the gut and things like that. Hopefully that answered the question. Sorry.
Yes. And the big five were gluten, dairy, peanuts, soy, possibly nightshades.
Eggs. So that's the thing, right? Eggs are actually extremely nutritious. So we don't want to have those out of our diet forever. Like they're so good for us. So I think that's where you have to be careful where we peel these out, it helps a lot, right? But if we heal the gut and we figure out why the eczema is there, those foods can happily be brought back in and you can enjoy them over the long term. The issue is when we just focus too much on the foods and we're not looking at why the eczema is there in the first place.
Yeah, it's hard to heal the gut if you're constantly, if you are reacting to these foods and these foods are wreaking havoc. It's like, how am I supposed to heal the gut when I'm constantly getting these allergens from the food? So taking them out temporarily, healing the gut so you don't react to these foods.
Totally. And I think food sensitivities at the end of the day are a symptom of a gut issue. Like 100%. Food sensitivities happen because there's inflammation in the gut, there's a bacterial imbalance, digestion's off, and we've probably got some leaky gut happening, right? And then all of a sudden we become reactive to foods. Food sensitivities are not the same as allergies. You're not born with these food sensitivities. They develop later in life usually, and it's because there's some type of imbalance happening. At the same time though, when we want to fix that imbalance, we can't be just bombarding the gut with these things that are driving it crazy because the immune system is going to have a really hard time recovering, right? It's like if we're taking gut healing supplements, we're using anti-inflammatory nutrients, we're managing the lifestyle, we're saying, hey, for 3 months, let's work on healing your gut. But then we're constantly eating the food that is driving up inflammation. We're on a hamster wheel. It's very, very hard. So I do think sometimes, especially with eczema, doing a short-term elimination while you kind of bring in those therapeutic nutrients and really get stuff under control can be helpful.
Question for you about stress. Yeah. Stress is a big one. It's like the root cause or a contributor to over 90% of every condition. Stress is somehow involved. I think, what did they say? Like 90%+ of doctor visits are from stress, basically. Yeah. So what do we do if stress is a contributor, but then stress is causing our eczema and then it's worsening our eczema? So our eczema is causing us more stress and we're just going back and forth and back and forth. It's like, okay, where does the loop end? How do I actually decrease my stress and then stop stressing about my eczema to actually make it better?
This is a great question. And honestly, something that I work with in practice quite a bit. Right? It's very common. A lot of us are stressed. We also have to remember stress can come from inside the body and outside the body. So even if you don't feel stressed, If you've got food sensitivities going on, underlying inflammation, the gut is a mess, that's going to be stress constantly. It's still demanding cortisol, right? So I think step one, as soon as you start that kind of first month where we say, yes, let's lighten the load, support detox, remove the inflammatory foods, immediately the stress is relieved a little bit and people do see progress with the eczema. So that can be helpful. I think also doing anything you can to calm down that kind of acute stress. Do you know what I mean? So I really find that breath work is really helpful here. And sometimes when we think about breath work, that can be stressful. I have clients tell me, oh my gosh, the thought of meditating for 20 minutes stresses me out. So that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like simple breathing techniques that you can do for 1 to 2 minutes twice a day. I often recommend the 4-7-8 breathing technique. And I ask my clients to do it first thing in the morning and last thing before bed. Just really helps to calm the nervous system down as soon as you wake up and before you go to sleep at night. And it can make you more resilient to stress over time. Alternate nostril breathing, super easy. And then also recognizing if you feel acutely stressed, right? Once you become more in tune with your body, you'll notice when cortisol is pumping, when you're feeling stimulated, your heart is kind of pounding in your chest or it feels tight. In those scenarios, just taking 3 deep breaths can make a huge difference, right? To just calm the nervous system down. So I think it's kind of like a 2-way street. We obviously need to do what we can to calm the eczema down because that's obviously going to help the person feel less stressed about their eczema. But we also have to work on daily stress management because we know stress also triggers eczema. Like how many people tell you, my eczema was totally under control and then I went through this huge stressful event and all of a sudden I woke up with an eczema flare and it's been there ever since, right? So we got to work on both at the same time. Hopefully that's helpful.
Yes. I mean, with stress, you kind of have to figure out what works for you, what you enjoy. And the thought of meditation can sound so scary, but like you said, just take a couple deep breaths. And some people don't even know. We're all just breathing from our chest and we have no idea that we're going.
Some people don't even breathe. Like sometimes people will be literally at their computers and then they start, I've had clients tell me like, wow, since I started paying attention to my breathing, I've realized that I'm only shallow breathing, or like time will go by where you're not even recognizing you're breathing, right? So I think being more aware of that. And with stress management, there's so much overwhelm about all of the things that we need to do all the time. But I think at the end of the day, whatever makes you happy and whatever you enjoy is going to help lessen your stress. So that might be getting a coloring book, right? And doing like the colored with numbers, drawing before bed, like that can be helpful. Going for a walk. If you like walking your dog, listening to music, if that helps to calm you down, bingo, that's an amazing way to reduce stress, right? We don't necessarily need to be doing like 30-minute meditations twice a day in order to be stress-free. If you want to do that, I'm all for it. But just remember that you don't need to do all of those things. I think just doing something that you enjoy that calms your nervous system down is great. And that can be anything.
Mm-hmm. It could also be putting on your favorite early 2000s music and dancing in the morning.
Dancing around. Honestly, it could be a meal that you really love. It could be going for coffee with a friend. Like there's so many ways to help reduce stress that I think are much more easy for people to manage.
Yeah. I also want to ask you about, okay. I did have a question first about inflammation. What are we doing to reduce some of that inflammation?
Oh my gosh. So inflammation, first of all, I think step number one is calming the nervous system down. Like that's a great way, right? So managing stress, doing your walks, breathing, things like that, the activities you enjoy. Anytime we manage stress, we are going to be calming down inflammation. Number two, lightening the load on the body. Right. So we've talked about this a lot, but I think figuring out like, are there things that are causing inflammation, whether it's on my skin, inside my body? So whether that's foods, products, the air that we're breathing, the water that we're drinking, kind of looking at that, definitely. And then also bringing in anti-inflammatory foods. There are so many foods that have incredible anti-inflammatory properties that have been shown to be beneficial for the skin. So I'm always recommending fatty fish at least twice a week, right? Sardines, mackerel, anchovies, salmon, herring, these are incredible. Get those in regularly. Things like olive oil, nuts and seeds can be really helpful. So I think bringing in more anti-inflammatory nutrients, I think I touched on food already, but obviously kind of removing those triggers. If you know that there are other foods you're sensitive to, peeling those out short term can drastically help to reduce inflammation. Moving the body, extremely helpful, even if it's just going for a walk, right? We know that helps to lower inflammation. Getting quality sleep. So there's lots of different things, but hopefully those kind of clarify what the tops would be, in my opinion.
Do you also like and recommend ginger and turmeric, doing teas or the juice, the shots in the morning?
Yes, I think that goes back to kind of those anti-inflammatory nutrients I was talking about. Definitely turmeric is beneficial. I would say, yeah, lemon, ginger, all of those kind of great nutrients. They're incredible for bringing down inflammation. When I talk to clients, we're often focusing on what I call the anti-inflammatory diet. And so that kind of encompasses, here are all the foods that are loaded with antioxidant properties. Let's emphasize those as much as we can and then peel out the ones that might be kind of bringing up the inflammation.
And then candida.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that. What is it? How is it playing a role? What can we do?
So candida definitely can contribute to eczema. And, you know, there's a couple patterns I often see with eczema clients. We've talked about this before, but I do a lot of stool testing. So I can see exactly what's going on with the gut. And oftentimes I do see candida show up on stool tests, but candida doesn't exist in isolation. There's usually other co-infections that are kind of taking place at the same time. But some of the patterns that I often see are candida overgrowth. In combination with some bacterial overgrowth, there is a particular bacteria called Staphylococcus that often shows up in eczema clients. This can actually be on the skin as well as in the gut. So I usually see that in conjunction with candida and H. pylori. Candida and H. pylori are very, very closely connected. H. pylori actually likes to hide out in the vacuoles of yeast, which is crazy to think about. So those two are often coexisting. And so can doing a candida program be helpful? Yes, but we got to look at the whole picture, like what else is going on in the gut. But yes, to answer your question, candida can definitely be a contributing factor. I would just make sure that you're ruling out everything and understanding kind of the full picture of what might be happening.
Yeah, that's the thing. As I was doing, I went deep into the depths of the internet just so I could ask you some good questions to see what people wanted to know. And the amount of videos of dermatologists that popped up saying eczema has nothing to do with the gut. It has absolutely nothing to do with the gut. And then the next video was someone being like, the only thing that cured my eczema was taking out these foods and healing my gut. It's like, okay, so you have a doctor, a dermatologist saying, well, it has absolutely nothing to do with it. That's a bunch of BS. And then you have someone who's like, literally, this is how I cleared my eczema. So it's just so fascinating to see everybody's different perspective and just to see, but not everybody's the same. For some people, it is going to be food. For other people, products are going to help, and it's just different. And maybe it's not those particular foods. Maybe it's something else in your gut, like candida or H. pylori, like you mentioned, parasites. Oh my gosh, parasites, you know?
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, the biggest thing to keep in mind is that your gut has a hand in virtually every function in the human body, right? So whether it is digesting food and absorbing nutrients, whether it is producing hormones, producing neurotransmitters, supporting the immune system, that all happens inside the gut. So I just personally cannot comprehend how we can say things like, oh, what's going on with our skin has nothing to do with the gut, because it absolutely does. Even if your skin, what's going on with your skin is rooted in a food sensitivity, that's from the gut. If it's rooted in an immune response, that's happening in the gut, right? If we have nutrient deficiencies that are contributing to poor skin health, like maybe we're low in zinc, we're not absorbing omega-3 fats, that's happening because of the gut. So I think I cannot emphasize this enough. Like, we have to look at the gut. What's triggering everyone is very different, right? And what's causing some of these issues with the gut is going to be a case-by-case basis. But I am always, first and foremost, it's the first place I'm starting with every single eczema client, because I've never had a client with eczema who has not also had a gut issue.
Yeah. Like we know these things now. And unfortunately, if your doctor is still saying whatever condition doesn't have anything to do with your gut is responsible for everything. Even if we think about Alzheimer's, you know, they call it type 3 diabetes. Everything is happening in your gut. So if someone's saying it doesn't, then they're not looking at the latest and greatest research. And it's what they're recommending is a little bit outdated because you just can't deny it. Your immune system is in your gut. Blood sugar is happening there. These food sensitivities, everything. Like you said, the way we're absorbing things, it all roundabout some which way or another will just come back to your gut.
100%. And I think also at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the things that doctors are recommending, like creams and medications, these will be helpful, but they are treating the symptoms, right? And I think the more that we treat the symptoms, the more likely it is that the eczema is going to come back. And how many clients do we see that, oh, I used a topical steroid, the eczema went away for a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden I went through a big stressful period, I ate really badly, who knows, drank a bunch of alcohol, right? And then all of a sudden I'm having this eczema flare again. And then we get caught in this cycle of like constantly having to go back to the medications, to go back to the creams. And those in themselves can cause more issues with the gut, especially, right? And the immune system and detox pathways. So we get into this kind of vicious cycle. So I do think at the end of the day, like, yes, it's not that there's a right and a wrong answer. It's just that when we want to look at kind of long-term relief from skin issues, not just eczema, any skin issue, we do want to look at what is the source of the problem? What is the root of all of that? And even though foods can be at play, toxins can be at play, stress can be at play, there's always something deeper. And that's where I'm always looking at, okay, what's happening with your gut microbiome?
Yes. And like you mentioned, there's a difference between treating the symptoms with a cream and then actually going in, getting to the root cause so that maybe the cream becomes irrelevant, or maybe the cream is just for extra itchy periods or whatever it may be. And I know before we had a long conversation before we actually did the podcast, and we talked about the topical steroid cream withdrawal and just how awful that can be. So yes, it may help in a short period of time or temporarily, but then there's also a lot of side effects. Healing your gut, what are the side effects? You just get better.
Oh, good one. You're only saying that better mood, better energy, better poop, better sleep, better skin. I don't see any harm there, right? But yeah, topical withdrawal, that can happen even after just using steroids once, right? So things that we just want to be mindful of. And I think, yeah, healing the gut, no harm. There's only going to be positive effects from that.
Yes. Yeah. We were talking about one of your clients that had the steroid cream withdrawal and just how awful it is, and just the skin peeling and shedding and bleeding and cracking, and it's absolutely horrible,
and unable to sleep at night, not being able to wear long sleeves. Like, there's so many terrible, terrible things that come with that. And fortunately, it's not something that's really spoken about, right? So I think first line of defense for anyone, if there's something wrong, if you're sick, you've got a skin rash, of course your first step is to go and see the doctor. And I think, unfortunately, we haven't topical steroid withdrawal is not something that is really talked about very often. And I don't think we actually know enough about it, right? So we're not talking about it. Here's a prescription, use it. And then all of a sudden, 2 months later, you've got your patient coming back saying, what the heck's going on with my skin? And because we don't know enough about it, the next step is to do more steroids. And then it just gets worse and worse and worse. So that's an unfortunate one as well.
I do want to ask you about some products too, but while we're kind of on the topic of food, and we'll wrap that up, what are your thoughts on coffee and alcohol and the role that it plays with our skin and eczema?
So I think this goes back to kind of that toxic load that I was talking about previously. We do know that alcohol can be hard on the liver, right? And so when we're trying to bring eczema down and we're trying to heal the gut and get that long-term resolution, we do want to peel out anything as much as we can, even 80%, right? Peel out anything that's going to make it more difficult for our body to heal. And that's going to be adding to that toxic load. I always think about the toxic load like a big barrel, right? And you might feel completely fine when your barrel is 3/4 full. But as soon as it gets to the top and starts overflowing, we start to have symptoms. And so with eczema, it's the same thing. We need to kind of work on emptying that barrel. And that can look like, number one, supporting the function of our detox organs, but also peeling out the things that are filling that barrel up time and time again. And I do think alcohol is one of those things that it adds quite a lot to the barrel. So do you need to never drink again for the rest of your life? No, but it could be helpful when you're cutting out those other foods and we're supporting detox, reducing elimination to kind of peel that out. At the very least, I usually recommend avoiding things like beer and wine, because oftentimes with eczema, we didn't touch on this too much, but there's often a histamine factor at play. So oftentimes people will be dealing with an underlying histamine sensitivity, which we know is typically driven by a gut infection, but beer and wine are very high in histamine. And so they can add a ton of fuel to the fire. So I think if you are drinking clear liquors all the way, try to go for those, like vodka, gin. Those are going to be much better options. Steer clear of the beer and wine, at least temporarily. Coffee. I mean, as someone who is a big coffee drinker, not a big coffee drinker, but like I like to have my morning coffee, right? I think we all do. It's a very enjoyable part of life. And coffee can also actually be supportive of the liver and gallbladder. So I don't think it needs to be removed completely, but I'm often paying attention to how are you drinking coffee, right? Are you having it in the morning on an empty stomach, totally black? We know that's not good for cortisol and blood sugar. So we're kind of adding some healthier functional things to it, like maybe some healthy fats, coconut oil, collagen, things like that, coconut milk, great to make the coffee a little bit more supportive. And then also paying attention to the quality of the coffee. So looking at, you know, are you drinking a coffee that's high quality? Is it mycotoxin and mold free? Things like that make a big difference.
Do you have a favorite brand that's mycotoxin mold free?
I do. I really like either Kicking Horse or Bulletproof. I think those two are great options.
Yes. Typically, I also like Bulletproof. I've heard just the extensive testing that they go through is like totally mold free and all.
Yes, I think Bulletproof is the only coffee in the market that's actually gone through like a rigorous testing process and can actively say like there's no mold or mycotoxins.
Yeah. I wonder maybe if Four Sigmatic has also, but that would be in the realm of mushroom coffee. So a little bit different. Yes. The other thing too, you're reading my mind about the alcohol with the beer and the wine and being high histamine. Is that something that would show up on the GIMAP test, or should we do food allergy test, or what are we doing about these histamines?
So typically with histamine sensitivity, it's very clear to me through symptoms. So when I'm doing a consultation with someone and they start describing things like, hey, I get rashes after I eat certain foods. I often notice a lot of sinus congestion or headaches after eating certain things. I've got brain fog. I have hives. Even, you know, histamine can also present as digestive issues too, like nausea, bloating, constipation, that sort of thing. But I find typically I have a good indication whether someone's dealing with histamine sensitivity when they start describing the foods that cause them to react and some of the symptoms they might be dealing with. And then when we run the stool test, there are certain bacteria that actually produce histamine in the gut. So if I see those show up on a stool test and someone is telling me that they're reacting to fermented foods, they're reacting to avocados, eggplants, these high histamine foods, right away, it's like, okay, yes, we know histamine is an issue. But I also look for infections. Like we know leaky gut, yeast, those can all contribute to histamine overload as well. So I wouldn't say I'm doing specific testing for histamine, if you know what I mean, but it's pretty clear when I'm talking to someone about their foods that cause them to react, what their symptoms are. Then we look at the stool test. We can get indications of what might be driving the histamine issue. So no, I'm not running like allergy and food sensitivity testing or histamine testing. I don't think it's even necessary. It's pretty clear.
That was also going to be my next question. So food allergy test, just skip it. If need be, go right to GIMAP testing.
So it's funny because, you know, food sensitivity testing, I think, is also an area that very misunderstood. Some practitioners love to use it, others don't. I am not a huge advocate for food sensitivity testing because I view food sensitivities as a symptom. I think that when you are reacting to multiple different foods, that's just an indication that something's going on with your gut, right? And typically the food sensitivities, the biggest ones we're looking at are things like gluten, dairy, soy, right? Eggs, that sort of thing. And so I'm already with eczema clients working on peeling those out. We'll talk about other foods that might bother them, and we might kind of minimize those for a little bit. But at the end of the day, removing the food sensitivities is not the long-term solution. So investing like $600-$800 in a food sensitivity test, in my opinion, is not usually worth it, because as soon as we start looking at the GI map test and we start addressing those results, we peel out those top inflammatory foods, drastic improvements, right? So I don't use food sensitivity testing often unless it's a very, very severe case and I feel like it's really necessary, but definitely I would be doing stool testing way before doing a food sensitivity test.
Do you like doing mineral testing with clients with eczema?
Yes, love doing mineral testing because, first of all, the mineral testing can tell us a lot about just the overall balance of minerals in the body, whether some are low, some are high, but it also gives us indications into things like adrenal function and thyroid function, which we know, we were just talking about this, when you're in chronic stress mode or you're in a very burnt out state, whatever that might be, that is going to contribute to what's going on with your gut and your skin. So I like to know what's going on with their stress response, how that impacts the gut-brain connection, how it might impact their skin. And mineral testing also gives me insight into heavy metals. So I can look at whether there are heavy metals accumulating in the body and whether that is contributing to the toxic load, right? Even things like copper toxicity. Copper toxicity is huge when it comes to skin issues. And so I like to see whether that is an issue by doing the hair tissue mineral analysis as well.
Yeah, we could go on a tangent with copper toxicity.
Yeah, another episode of copper
toxicity. Skip that for now. I want to talk about some other topical things, just get your opinion on them. What do you recommend for your clients who just can't control the urge to itch? They need to itch. They need to scratch. Do you have any topical holistic remedies, the holistic packs, anything like that to put on top of the skin?
So there are some salves and different products that I do like for eczema. St. Francis makes a really good one called the Skin Healing Salve. So I like to recommend that, but I also find things like calendula creams can be very helpful. Calendula is a very calming herb. So that one can be really helpful. You can also look at things like colloidal oatmeal baths. Those can be beneficial as well. Really, really easy to do at home. I'll also often do like skin oils as well. So using something like a carrier oil, whether it's coconut oil or jojoba oil or something like that, and then adding some essential oils in there that we know are calming for the skin, that can be very beneficial. With eczema, we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but oftentimes there's actually bacteria on the skin. So staphylococcus can be in overgrowth on your skin. And so in that case, I would be looking at doing kind of like a carrier oil and adding some essential oils in there that we know have antifungal, antibacterial properties, like lavender, tea tree, peppermint, chamomile, these types of things. Even coconut oil can be helpful if we're suspecting bacteria or fungus, but those are kind of the things that I'm more leaning on, and then staying away as much as possible from anything that's scented, anything that's got a lot of kind of those toxins and chemicals. I'll often get clients to look at the Yucca app as well, like Y-U-K-A. Just scan products and see if there's anything in there. But generally speaking, you do want to be looking for kind of unscented products as much as possible with minimal ingredients. For soaps, shea butter, Castile soap, that sort of thing, very gentle. And then, you know, the creams that help to calm things down.
For soaps in the shower, do you like the, let's say, Dr. Bronner's Castile soap, or what do you like a tea tree soap?
So it's also difficult with eczema because when the skin is really, really inflamed and it's raw and itchy, sometimes tea tree oil can actually be irritating. So you have to be mindful. And that's when I'd be looking more to those calming products, like a shea butter soap, for example. Very, very helpful. I would also, the Castile soap, I'm a big fan of, like the unscented one. I think that's very gentle, very natural. I think those are both good options.
Should we be spending more time in the water or less time? Like, is it beneficial to be in the water, let's say in the ocean, or if we're doing colloidal oatmeal bath, or should we just be doing quick showers, not a lot of water on our skin?
Good question. So I think colloidal oatmeal baths, I'm a big fan of, like, I think definitely helpful for eczema, and sea salt. Amazing. Going in the ocean. I've actually had clients tell me I went on vacation and I was swimming in the ocean and my eczema completely cleared or lessened significantly. And I've also seen this happen with acne as well, skin rashes, like, and we've all experienced it. You go swimming in the ocean and your skin looks fantastic. It's naturally exfoliated. It's hydrated. Sea salt is also loaded with minerals. So when we're in the ocean, we're absorbing all of those minerals. We're getting that natural exfoliation and it's very detoxing, right? So I think, yeah, like I'm a big fan. I think going in the ocean, if you can, fantastic. Do it. We were talking about this earlier, people actually moving to Mexico to be closer to the ocean with eczema. So I'm a huge fan of that. Colloidal oatmeal baths, I think, are fine. You want to be mindful of very hot water. So oftentimes doing a super hot steamy shower can actually make the eczema worse, even though it feels better in the moment. You want to kind of minimize that as best you can. And then I think just using less products in general is typically the better option. Like less is always more. Your skin does have its own natural exfoliation cycle and it's always trying to heal. So if we're using a lot of products that are disrupting that over and over again, it's hard, right? The eczema is going to have, it's going to be more difficult for your skin to naturally regenerate.
What are your thoughts on bleach baths?
So bleach baths, the reason that they are effective is because they're killing bacteria. So we're talking all about that staphylococcus. Bleach is killing that off, right? So in doing that, we start to reduce the eczema. I'm much more of an advocate for the natural route. So I think using those essential oils I was talking about, using the coconut oil, like that to me seems like a much better option than bathing in bleach. I haven't had any clients who have tried bleach baths and told me about it. I'm just kind of privy to it based on, obviously we've seen it's blowing up right now all over the internet. But the reason that's working is because it's getting rid of the bacteria, right? When we think about bleach, that's a very harsh chemical. I think there are much more natural routes to go that will be just as effective.
Yeah. I'm thinking if there's an alternative to kill that bacteria, why not do the alternative? Because then the bleach just comes with so many more side effects, like impacting your fertility, your hormones, ruining the skin barrier, like all sorts of other things. That is just, yeah.
No, definitely last resort, if at all. I think also, remember, your skin has its own microbiome. So the more that we are stripping that microbiome away, the more susceptible we are to future infections. The same with your gut microbiome. When we take antibiotics, for example, over and over and over again, we are really disrupting that ecosystem. We're disrupting the microbiome. And if we're not nourishing that and taking care of it, we're going to develop more issues in the future. So same with the skin. And I even talk to my acne clients about this as well. With acne, it's always like, let's dry out the skin. Let's exfoliate as much as possible to get rid of the cysts and the boils. And I get that. But at the end of the day, that is very disruptive to what's going on with the microbiome. You're actually better off doing like a Greek yogurt mask on your face, boosting up your probiotic stores, right? Or something gentle like Manuka honey. So I think the exact same goes with eczema. Bleach is just going to be destroying the skin microbiome. So it's not something that I would be reaching for at all.
With Manuka honey, what are your thoughts on that topically or internally? Do you like that for eczema?
Love it for both. I think internally, we know like Manuka honey has been helped. It's been shown to be helpful for inhibiting H. pylori and other bacterial infections. It supports the immune system. So I love Manuka honey, huge advocate, as long as you're getting a strong one that's actually, you know, has everything that we wanted to have in there. And I think on the skin as well, it can be very helpful. I use it for acne, eczema, skin rashes, definitely a huge fan.
And then celery juice.
Yeah, celery juice, you know, this has been around for so long as like the thing that's going to help to fix your IBS and fix your eczema and, you know, get rid of bloating and all that stuff. There's nothing wrong with drinking celery juice. Like it's loaded in potassium, it's got antioxidants, it's hydrating. But is it the thing that's going to move the needle and get rid of eczema or IBS or these other things? Probably not. Like I have no problem with adding that into an eczema protocol or a regimen if someone feels good with it, but I'm not leaning on that as my main approach for handling eczema.
Yeah. I've seen people give it a try. And for some people, it's a miracle. And for some other people, it does absolutely nothing. So I'm like, oh, what's the harm? If you want to spend $6 on celery and juice it, go for it. It could be your saving grace. It could do nothing, but you know what? You're getting veggies in. So What's the worst?
And I think also like a starting point, right? Like if someone is starting off eating a standard American diet, lots of processed foods, limited fruits and vegetables, no anti-inflammatory nutrients. Yeah, if they start replacing, I don't know, their morning double-double with a celery juice, huge. That's great, right? Like I'm all for that. But I think it really depends on kind of where your starting point is. And that's how much benefit you're going to notice from something. And I just wouldn't be looking at celery juice as like the be all end all for curing eczema or anything else. It can be a great adjunct therapy, like add it in, all for it, but it's not going to move the needle at the end of the day.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on some herbs and supplements? Do you recommend omega-3? I know earlier you said some under drops. What, like just a general, what would you recommend typically for your clients?
In general, I think in terms of kind of bringing symptoms down and calming the eczema down a little bit, I do like using things like borage oil or GLA supplements, high EPA fish oil supplements can be really helpful. You could also look at cod liver oil. Those have all been shown to be helpful for the skin. So I would definitely kind of lean on those in addition to getting those omega-3s through the diet. And antioxidants can also be beneficial. So like vitamin A, C, E, selenium, zinc, you can get blends, you can do them individually. We know zinc is very important for the skin barrier. So even just emphasizing zinc foods can be really, really helpful. Like I said, I do like to do some natural detoxification support. So anything that's going to support the liver, the lymphatic system, the kidneys, helping to get the bowels moving. Love doing that. I'm a big fan of trace minerals and electrolytes as well, just to help hydrate at a cellular level to kind of promote more of that healing process. Those are kind of some of my go-tos.
Do you like the adrenal cocktails? Do you recommend those to your clients?
Love adrenal cocktails. I'm a huge fan. I do notice orange juice can sometimes be a trigger for eczema. So instead of that, I would be doing something like lemon or lime, even cranberry. Cranberry is an incredible addition to adrenal cocktails because it actually has polyphenols that help to feed the beneficial bacteria in the gut, especially those bacteria that are producing butyrate, which are those anti-inflammatory nutrients. So I'd be leaning more on that with eczema. And then we know cranberry also tons of antioxidants. So I'm a huge fan of that. But yeah, adrenal cocktails all the way. If someone's burnt out, they've got low energy, they need a boost, you suspect, you know, nervous system dysfunction, definitely would lean on those.
I like the swaps too, that a lot of people just wouldn't even consider. They look up a recipe, they're all roughly the same with the coconut water, the orange juice, but it's good to know you can do other citrus or.
Yeah, also swapping the coconut water for aloe vera juice can also be fantastic. Aloe vera is very anti-inflammatory, helps to support the gut. So with eczema, I'll often do that as well, like a cranberry aloe sea salt blend.
I love aloe vera juice. So, I mean, not like the taste. It's not like the taste, but the benefits are so good. My mom's been giving it to me since I was like 12.
Oh, it's amazing. Aloe vera is good for so many things like constipation, leaky gut, skin health. Oh my gosh, immune dysfunction. Like it's awesome. And then also we know it's got those minerals and electrolytes. So very good as well.
Yeah. And topical too. If you got burns or whatever, it's just awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Last couple of questions before I let you go. Is there anything else that we didn't get to talk about that you want to mention or any wisdom, life lessons you want to send everybody off with? Just some good positive words or anything else eczema wise?
Well, firstly, I think I could talk about eczema and just skin health in general for hours. So we probably did miss a few things, but I think at the end of the day, the biggest thing that I want people to understand when it comes to not just eczema, but your skin health in general, is that we need to lean away from looking at these topical solutions and really figuring out what the root of all of this is, right? Your skin is a window into what's going on inside of your body, specifically with your detox organs and with your gut. So the more that you can do research and dig into that and figure out what's going on there, the more you're going to see long-term solutions. I think with eczema, we get really caught up in the sense that we have to just manage it for the rest of our lives. And that's actually not the case. I have seen so many clients be completely eczema-free once we do the work to heal the gut. right? And to all the other things that we were kind of talking about. So you don't have to live with eczema for the rest of your life. If you have eczema, you do not need to live gluten, dairy, sugar, nightshade free forever. There are definitely solutions out there. It's just finding the right approach for you. It's figuring out what is actually going on with your particular eczema, remembering that everyone is different. A candida cleanse is not going to be the answer for every person with eczema. But yes, I think it's just that reminder of, you know, we don't have to live with eczema. We don't have to live with skin issues. The more we work, do the internal work, the better we're going to feel on the outside.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
A couple more questions too as you're talking. Do you use and recommend any air filters, or I'm thinking for really dry, cracked, itchy skin, a humidifier?
Yep, huge fan of both of those. I think when we talk about the foundations, and this is something I'm talking about with every client, not just clients with skin issues, the foundations are clean air, clean water, and good food, right? Then we've also got to look at sleep, stress, that sort of thing. But I think definitely if you live in an environment where you suspect there might be mold in the environment, you are around a lot of pollution, things like that, then filtering your air can be very helpful, at least in the bedroom or the room that you kind of spend the most time in. I would also say humidifiers 100%. If you're over here in Canada where it's dry, we've got the heat pumping all all winter long, the windows aren't open, doing a humidifier can be very, very helpful.
Do you have an air filter that you like and recommend, or still researching?
I actually use the Rowenta filter. It's not as popular, but I've had it for years. I really like it. I also know Air Doctor is a really good one as well. So those are kind of my two go-tos.
I get the Air Doctor ads all the time.
Yes. But again, I want to say air filters are really expensive. You can also get houseplants. Houseplants are amazing for detoxing your air, right? So I just talk about this with clients often. If you can't afford to buy a $500 Air Doctor, grab a couple of houseplants, get a snake plant, put it in your bedroom. You're immediately going to start detoxing and filtering the air. So it's a very, very easy way. Even opening the doors and the windows, fantastic way to get more air circulation.
Love it. And then any other final words? Where can people find you online, connect with you, learn more about you?
Yes. So I am on Instagram at eatingwithemily _. So you can find me there. I talk about eczema and gut issues all the time. So check that out. You can also go to my website, which is emilydawsonnutrition.com. I have a lot of blog posts on gut health and skin health and things like that. You can also reach out to me for one-on-one support through my website. And I'm sure you'll link that all below as well. But yeah, that's where to find me. If you have specific questions, feel free to send me an email at emily@emilydawsonnutrition.com. Happy to chat with you all about skin.
Thank you so much for listening into this episode with my good friend, Emily Dawson. If you like this episode, feel free to share it with a friend. You can also subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. That would mean the world to me. For more health, wellness, and lifestyle tips, I'm on Instagram at nutritionmoderation, online at nutritionmoderation.com. I am also starting to upload these podcasts to YouTube. If you want to see the full, unfiltered, unedited version, that will be over on YouTube. Video version, if you want to see everything that goes down, catch us over there on YouTube. Otherwise, I hope you have an amazing day wherever you are, and I'll chat with you very, very soon.